The Subcommittee of the Permanent and Joint Rules to order. Members, we have in front of us a document, the SR0019, which are the temporary rules we're operating under with, I think, is it just technical changes to really get it into committee name changes? And maybe I should have counsel explain what's in here, in addition to the temporary rules we're operating under.
So, Mr. Chairman, as you said, this is the 2013 temporary Senate rules, and it incorporates several changes, most of which are technical. The main differences that you'll see as you page through the document, and you have to turn to about page 6 to begin seeing the references are added to budget divisions to make sure that they're subject to same rules as committees. Another item I'll point out there, on beginning on line 6.11, Rule 10.3 there appears in the form that it existed in the 2009 Senate rules relating to uniform criteria and committee assignment.
Mr. Chair, do you want to do it section by section, and you want to go through the whole thing and then go back for questions?
Well, let's there's not much more in here, I don't think, right? So, Council, let's just finish this up, and then we'll come back to what people want to talk about.
Mr. Chairman, you're correct. I won't go through all the instances where division is substituted for committee. There is one other location where I missed that. That's on page 2, just pointing out that the proper name for the State and Local Government Committee has been added to Rule 4. And that is the substance of the staff document. And I'll point out again, this is not in, it's drafted like a resolution, but at this point it's just a staff document. And it's up to the subcommittee to work on it, and then how you want to take it from there is the will of the subcommittee.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I am wondering about the new language or the language that is replaced on page 6, 611 through 614. I guess, as I recall from several years ago when we looked at this, there is no uniform criteria. What is it? Where is it? What is the practical effect of this language? Because there's no provision for creating that uniform criteria. So I don't.
Senator Fischbach, here's the situation that I personally experienced is for as long as I can remember, the Senate has had kind of an unwritten rule, you'd call it, that finance chairs can't also serve on the tax committee. That's kind of the kind of thing I'm thinking about, is that we that's been the practice that mm-hmm. a person who chairs a spending committee can't also serve on the committee that raises the money. And that's how we're currently lined up right now. That's how we've been lined up a long time. I think that's an example of what we'd consider probably a uniform criteria that the minority, neither the majority or the minority would be able to put a chair of a finance committee on the tax committee.
Mr. Chair, if we are going to put this language into writing, then we need a written uniform criteria. I understand what you're talking about is kind of custom and usage, kind of tradition, but you need to come up with a uniform criteria if you're going to have it here. So that if that, and I understand there's issues of, well, we don't want true freshmen on the finance committee, or the issue of who's sitting on what committees, but then maybe those should be written into the rules as opposed to just this language that kind of refers to a uniform criteria that is not in writing.
Well, I think, Senator Fischbach, it would need to be in writing. Starting on line 6.12, it says the uniform criteria must be adopted by the majority group and transmitted to the minority group, together with a notification of committee and budget.
And so, Mr. Chair, position.
So it would need to be in writing.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that what this implies is that the majority caucus gets to create this, which is not something we necessarily do. If the rules committee wanted to create something, but this would be completely controlled by the majority caucus and just handed over to the minority caucus with no bipartisan input. So if that's what you're aiming at, just having the majority have some kind of ability to impose upon the minority what they'd like, that's without any bipartisan input, then maybe
Well, this was in the rules for council prior to 2010.
Yes, it was.
I don't know that there was ever any problem with it. Unless somebody was aware of a problem. Well, Senator Hatt.
And Mr. Chairman, I agree with Senator Fischbach, and I agree it's been in the rules, but during the almost 40-year period of time, there was one party that was the majority party in the Senate, so it's not surprising that it was in the rules for a long time. I agree with Senator Fischbach that I understand the intent to have a criteria. I think the question is, should the criteria be determined just by the majority party, or should it be determined by a committee that has some bipartisan input, and maybe the Rules Committee? So if we're going to have a uniform criteria, maybe that would be established and adopted by the Rules Committee and then use that to I think that's the point that Senator Fischbach is making. I would totally agree. I think it just would be
helpful. I'm not adverse to actually taking this out and working on it, I guess. I don't have anything specific in mind. It's just I think there are some kind of custom and usage things that we do relative to committee assignments that maybe haven't been actually ever delegated to writing, but I guess I don't have an Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I don't know, unless you had an even number or something, you know.
Well,
you know, I mean, then you're, I don't think it's that, well, anyway, take it out and work on it, I guess.
What if we took out adopted by the majority group and transmitted to the minority group and said developed by the Rules Committee?
Mr. Chair, and maybe Senate Council, but what I'm looking at is the uniform criteria must be adopted by the
majority.
Well, by the Rules Committee or something like that. Is that what
potentially
you're getting
at? Loud,
yeah.
But then the balance there is different, you know, with us too. So.
Right.
Right?
Yes. But at least there's some
opportunity to there'd be Mr. More
Chair,
input
at least there's probably. Something. I mean,
it'd be
equal.
I know you're trying to be helpful.
It works for now.
Yeah, you are trying to be
unusual.
No. You know what?
Council, can you think of some language there that kind of gets at Senator Fischbach's point?
Mr. Chairman and members, what I think would work for now, beginning on line
6.13,
would be to delete
majority
group and transmitted to the minority group. So
you're right.
Everything after the first the. And then on line 6.14, I think you want to delete the entire line. There are other provisions in the rule that require notification of positions. So delete all of line 6.14 and then insert by the Rules Committee, or by the Committee on Rules and Administration, excuse me. What I will point out is this rule applies when the Senate is after an election has been held and is organizing. So you'd have criteria adopted by a Rules Committee that were in effect from a preceding biennium.
Mr. Chair, if it's a uniform criteria, it would most likely be, and Mr. Chair, we're not talking about anything like other than the chair can't sit on both of the committees and things like that, things that you mentioned as custom and usage. And so I don't think it's like super controversial. I think it's something, or partisan. I think it is something that once you've probably established, you're going to hang on to for a few years.
Well, I agree. I think having something so that we can, if we start to have some problems, can actually have some standards is probably helpful.
I agree.
Otherwise, the two leaders could end up in a tit for tat about, I mean, I think we always want to respect the wishes of both parties to put on committees whoever they would like. But I think subject to some previous custom, I think, is. So, I mean, I think that amendment suggested by council works. I think it works fine, doesn't it?
Very good.
Yeah.
Senator Fischbach moves the oral language recited by council on line 6.13, delete the majority group and transmitted it. Delete everything after the.
Mm-hmm. First the.
The first the, and then delete line 6.14 and insert.
Committee on Rules and Administration.
Committee on Rules and Administration. Senator Fischbach, is that your motion?
So moved.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Oral amendment is adopted. Is there anything else in the document? The rest is all just kind of technical, I think.
This guy.
Correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The remainder of the changes in the document simply relate to adding divisions where appropriate. And the document is also here to serve as a reference point for any other amendments members may have.
Other amendments? I have the A4,
which is in the packet.
Which is in your packet. The current language in the rules, 7.2, is awful ambiguous to me. It says at least 15 days before the deadline for committees other than committees on finance to act favorably on omnibus budget bills, the targets will be announced. That number can move all over the place. I mean, you can't announce targets until you have the budget forecast. So this, what the change that I was thinking about here is more consistent with the House does. What the House does is they've pegged their announcement of the budget targets on a date after the forecast is announced. And that seems like kind of more of a certain thing. I mean, you can't do it till after that anyway. So this says within 30 days after the forecast that the targets have to be announced, which is, I think the House might have 25 days. But this is very similar to what they have. I'm not necessarily wed to this if people really think that the current language is more important, but I just think linking it to the forecast is the more, it's the practical way we have to do it anyway.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
With all due respect, I don't believe the chair should be offering amendments.
I think we could have someone else move it, but I had it drafted.
Okay, well, I'm just I had this issue with one of the House members.
Did I actually offer it?
You said I have an amendment, right. And that's why I said with all due respect, Mr. Bach, that or Senator.
I don't think
Bach.
I offered it.
Okay,
I'm just giving you a warning.
But no, I wanted to make sure that we handled it all properly because I didn't want. But no, I.
So do we have any discussion on that? I think it's actually a more workable rule. It's very clear that within 30 days after the forecast, you got to announce your targets.
Also, move the amendment.
Discussion. Senator Metzen moves the A4. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Four is adopted. Radical change to the rules. That's what I'll forever be remembered for, Senator Metzen. That's what you'll be remembered for.
That's
that. Big change linking the targets to the forecast.
It'll be the Metzen rule.
My legacy. Yeah.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman had spoken to me earlier about he had a suggested change of the rules. He is actually here to talk about it. It's the A16 amendment, and I'd like to offer that amendment at this time and give Senator Newman an opportunity to explain it since he is here.
Senator Newman, Senator Hahn offers the A16 amendment. Sit wherever you'd like. Wherever you'd like.
That's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Out of the tables feels like it's a long ways away.
It is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to bring this amendment forward, and I just want to have a brief discussion on it. I don't intend to take a lot of your time on this, but it's my understanding that from the mid '90s until 2003, 2004, something in that neighborhood, the language that I am offering had been in the Senate rules, and then sometime after 2004, thereabouts, it was removed. And everybody at the table has got a lot more experience in the Senate than I do. for the first 2 years that I was in the Senate, I was in the back of the chambers, and I was talking to the backs of people during floor debate. Now I'm in the front of the chamber, and when I am talking to people, I have my back to them. And I will tell you, Mr. Chairman and members, it is a very, very awkward feeling. And in my world, when you turn your back to somebody that you are talking to, you are being discourteous and you are being rude. Now, I realize that the conversation does, in fact, have to flow through the president in order to keep order, you know, on the floor. I really do realize that. But, for instance, recently I was on the Senate floor. I was pulled up short because I was having an exchange, I believe, with Senator Eakin. And these are genuine questions that I had on his bill. And I am forced to talk to him with my back turned to him. And it just feels like I am being discourteous to everybody behind me because I am not at liberty to turn around and talk to them. And my feeling is, Mr. Chairman, is that I have an absolute right on the Senate floor to try and convince my colleagues to join my way of thinking. And I think that my colleagues have an equal right to try and convince me to join their way of thinking. And it is very difficult, at least, you know, in my world and the way I look at things, to have that conversation with our backs turned to one another. And with that in mind and knowing that, you know, I really feel like I am being discourteous to my colleagues, that is the reason I brought this bill forward. And I would simply like to know what the subcommittee feels about this. Maybe you could give me some history on it or whatever. But that's the reason why I'm bringing it forward. And I just feel very uncomfortable on the Senate floor turning my back to my colleagues and talking to them.
I wish we had Senator Belanger here. And Senator Belanger was always down front. And he's the one that felt so strongly about that issue of addressing all remarks through the president. But,
and Mr. Chair, I know that Senator Newman mentioned it to me earlier, too, about the pre-1990 language. Is anyone familiar with it? I guess it would have been Senator Speer would have been president then. And then, so I guess I'm not familiar with it, and I'd just be curious more than anything about it that it did exist. And I'm not doubting Senator Newman that it did exist, but I'd be just curious about it. So you didn't know.
I don't remember that.
Because it just seems like, okay, interest. I would be curious, but
sure.
Senator Metzen.
I think the system has worked quite well. I mean, it's not any different than if you're in a committee structure. I mean, you go through the lead person through the, and you just don't flop here and there and that. And I haven't. You're the only one that I've kind of heard that from, so I don't think it's a big of a deal personally, but I think it's worked over the years. I did that kind of stuff up there for 8 years, and I don't always seem to have pretty good movement, you know, back and forth and recognizing people. And so I don't know if it needs a change, but
Mr. Chair,
I think you need that transition, or I think you got to go that way and then bounce off. So.
Senator.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Metzen. My concern is not stopping the rule
the
that everything has to go through the chair. I acknowledge that, and that is a good rule.
I don't. Yeah.
My concern is not that. My concern is that if I'm standing on the Senate floor and either Senator Bach asks me to yield or I ask him to yield, and then we have this conversation, he's looking at my back and I'm not looking at him. And Senator Metzen, I think that is discourteous on my part to turn my back to a senator on the Senate floor. I think it's discourteous. And that's why I'm asking you to consider this rule change. I'm not asking you to eliminate going through the president. But, gee, I just think that we should at least be able to turn around and look at each other when we are having a conversation. And keep all of the other rules in place.
talking a lot like a House member.
Yeah, I gotta say. I think, Mr. Chairman, that bobblehead effect kind of bothers me when people sit or spinning around like a top. You know,
I understand about that. I totally understand what you're saying, yeah, Senator Newman. I think the risk we run is people get into a conversation when they're facing each other, and it becomes harder for the president, I think, to maintain the decorum. It would be pretty tempting if we're having a direct exchange on the floor to start answering each other. And I think that's one of the things about the Senate that we've been pretty successful at avoiding, is kind of that free-for-all kind of conversation that you see so often happen on the House floor.
And Mr. Chair, I will readily acknowledge that the decorum in the Senate is quite different than the decorum in the House. And I will also tell you that I sincerely appreciate the decorum in the Senate. It is much more to my liking.
But this, keep it that way.
Yeah, we want to keep it that way, and I agree. But this one is truly bothering me. I'm just wondering is there any middle ground where you know, maybe in general debate we have to keep facing forward, but in terms of how do we handle the issue when I'm asked to yield and I have to keep my back turned to my colleague?
Well, I think one of the things that the rule does is it always allows members, when they're speaking, to be presenting themselves to the camera. If you think of where the cameras are, anytime a member gets up to speak and you're on television, the camera is always on you from one angle or the other. If you, Senator Newman, were to address me and turn to talk to me, and they want, the camera would be at your back. So I'm not sure that is the best presentation for us to have on television either.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would tend to agree with you, except I'm a lot more concerned about you than I am about the camera.
Well, Chairman, I think this is a camel's nose under the tent. You're going to have cheeseburgers on the floor pretty soon. You're going to have we just can't go down that road, Senator. You talk about the House. I mean, you know, they have pretzels and their cheeseburgers. We can't.
I do think the presentation, I mean, most of the public views us on television. And I think
that's right.
When members are speaking, if the camera's directly on them, I think it's a better presentation to the public about the Senate. And I don't know if that's the reason the rule was ever put in. I don't know if that was the reason that Senator Belanger always made such an issue out of that. But we all know where the two cameras are. And they do have the effect of having, when you're speaking on the floor, you're looking into the camera. And I do think that's worth it. I don't know if you had thought about that, Senator Newman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the answer is yes, I have thought about the cameras. And very honestly, I don't think about the cameras very much. I am a lot more interested in what's going on the floor, and I honestly do listen to the debate. I really do. And I am tuned in to whoever it is that is talking about an issue, because I want to hear what they have to say. So this is, on my part, I am not trying to get cheeseburgers on the Senate floor. I would oppose that vigorously.
Mayor Joe McGuire wanted her water bottle very badly, and we just
and
never
I would oppose
got
that.
There, right?
It was Senator Fishbach. But this
chair,
one
yes,
issue
that was an issue.
I guess I simply I appreciate you, you know, allowing me to bring this forward, and I would ask that maybe the president, you know, keep in mind that we are human beings, and when we are addressing our colleagues, sometimes we are going to turn, even without thinking. I will do my absolute best to continue facing forward, but it's going to happen, and I would really ask for just a little bit of leniency so that we are not interrupted and interrupt the flow of the dialogue, and I will do my best to conform. And with that,
Mr. Chairman, then I would withdraw the A16 amendment.
Yeah. Thank you.
Very much.
Okay.
Other amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hall had wanted an amendment to be considered to the rules, and I had thought he was going to be here. I don't see him here, and I think Mr. Bodden has copies. It's the A14 amendment. I will certainly do my best to speak on his behalf. And I think we've made some attempt to try to locate Senator Hall, and if he does make his way to the committee, well,
Senator Hamm, we have some other staff amendments that we could take first if you want to wait.
All right, well, then I'll withdraw the amendment, and we'll see if he makes it here in the next few minutes.
Does anybody else have something? I know council has some staff amendments, but are there other members' amendments?
I don't.
Let's see, Senator Hamm, what our staff are suggesting for some rules changes, and then when Senator Hall gets here, we'll take your amendment up. Council, whose idea is the A12 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, if I had to blame one staff member, I'd select Mr. Nelman. The intention behind the A12 is simply to make this rule easier to understand. There are no substantive changes made in the rule. It's simply a matter of revising it so that it's easier to read. Obviously, you can see it numbers the various types of amendments that would be out of order on an omnibus bill. I do have a document that would show you how this looks if it's engrossed, if the members would find that helpful at some point. We could distribute that, but I think it otherwise speaks for itself.
I think it doesn't change the effect of the rule, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. This is the stricken and inserted language is simply being moved to a different place within the rule to make it easier to read.
And, Mr. Chair, this rule is always a challenge, you know, to get it so that everybody can understand it. And, you know, this language is probably as good as any, I guess, you know, to make it a little better to understand. Yeah.
It does read easier. A little easier to understand, yeah. I think.
But then the next guys, they'll have a problem reading it, too. You know, I mean, after we're gone and the next guys try to interpret it, they'll have issue. But you know, potentially, and I know I saw this beforehand, and this doesn't, potentially it's cleaner, more clear, so I don't have an issue with it.
Senator Hamm, does it look okay?
Although that it's Mr. Nauman's, I don't
know. Well, I think if you see the actual engrossed version of it, if you get a chance to read it without the stricken language.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I agree it's hard to capture the intent and language, but I think Mr. Nauman, I've worked with him over the years. I think he does a great job, and I'll take his recommendations.
Senator Hamm moves the A12 amendment. It's for what our chief fiscal analyst might forever be known for. On the A12, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Contrary, no. Motion passes.
Mr. Chair, there was just kind of we were just wondering, does the and as some of the staff have just seen it, so they were kind of
okay.
There. So maybe we could just, I know we've adopted it, but I'd still just follow up.
Let's visit about it. Okay.
Increase net appropriation from a fund, and then it says without a corresponding increase in net revenue. The way I understand their question is that does that net revenue increase have to be from that fund? Or am I
What does the word corresponding mean? That imply from the same place?
So, and so you're saying yes, that, Mr. Chair, that increase would have to come from that same fund because it says corresponding?
I think that would be the way in
and
the intent.
And Mr. Bodden looks like he's nodding his head too, so, okay.
Mr. Bodden?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct. I think that was the intent of the original, you know, the way the rule is written right now.
Okay. Just wanted to... As people are just seeing it, I just wanted to make sure they understood. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think that would be our intent, that you wouldn't replace a general fund appropriation with a game and fish fund one or something, that we keep it within the legacy bill. For example, when it comes to the floor, you can move things around within the bill but not out of some other revenue stream.
Thank you for indulging me on that. Thanks.
Did that quite a bit for you? Other staff suggestions? Council?
Mr. Chairman and members, this suggestion comes from the engrossing secretary's office and relates to how minutes are ultimately completed and made public and delivered to the Legislative Reference Library. The existing rule doesn't provide a great deal of clarity and doesn't provide a deadline. What this would require quite specifically is that minutes for any committee, subcommittee, or division must be completed by October 1st of each year for the preceding legislative session, and they have to be made available to the public upon completion and approval. You'll see the existing rule requires delivering the minutes to the Legislative Reference Library, and this provides an October 1st deadline for that.
Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Is the library been having trouble with getting minutes? Is that, or the grossing secretary having trouble getting minutes to deliver them to the library?
Mr. Chairman, I think the latter is correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this seems reasonable. I didn't see any issue with that.
Senator Fischbach moves the A8 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion passes. So what are we doing here?
Mr. Chairman, I think I can say that this request originated with the front desk of the Senate and has to do with the disposition of resolutions. The existing rule is somewhat difficult to understand because it's contained in two separate paragraphs. At one point in time, there was an initiative to split a lot of Senate rules into, I think, a paragraph for every sentence, practically. What this makes it clear is once a resolution has been introduced, and this refers to a specific set of resolutions, those that are not in bill form and are not originating from the Committee on Rules, if a member requests, the resolution must be referred to the Committee on Rules. And then, again, if no member has requested that the resolution be referred to the Committee on Rules, then if a member requests, the resolution must lie over a day before any debate or action on the resolution. This is largely intended to rearrange existing language in a more easy-to-understand format. The substantive difference would be that the resolution on request is referred to the Committee on Rules, rather than the proper committee, and this fits with the existing practice for those resolutions. They're invariably referred to the committee.
That's what we currently do, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, that's correct. That's the practice, but the rule doesn't specifically say that.
Yeah, okay, because that's what we do. Okay.
These are resolutions that are not a bill. These are the type of resolutions that Senator Hann and I sign.
They go in the waste paper basket?
I don't know where they all go, Senator, but there's sure a lot of them.
Mr. Chair, I don't think there's any problem with this. It sounds like this is what we're kind of doing in practice anyway, so it's appropriate.
Senator Hann moves the 8-10 amendment.
And Mr. Chair, this would be resolutions for the opening day and it would include Oh, Boy Scout resolutions, those congratulatory,
right.
That's the prettier word.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Does Senator Weaker have about 2/3 of these?
I don't check who they are. I just know that Senator Hann signs them after I do.
You know, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, maybe we should put a number limit in the rule so we can.
400 per senator.
Yeah. per term.
Dead cut isn't about a third.
Senator Sieben renews her motion on the 810 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Posting for employment, counsel.
Mr. Chairman, the change here that you can see, the immediately obvious change, is reducing the posting requirement from 2 weeks to 1 week. I think the rule as it exists now has been in place for a long time and doesn't reflect necessarily the current hiring practices, needs, and basically capacity that exists with being able to post online and communicate fairly quickly. So I think that's it's a matter of flexibility and convenience. There's nothing in the rule that, the way it's worded here, that would prohibit posting for more than 1 week, but it allows some additional flexibility, and it incorporates the practice, as you can see, of posting on the Senate website, which is frequently used to post for these positions. So it's just updating the rule and adding the flexibility from 2 weeks to 1 week.
Mr. Chair, I don't see any problem with
Senator Hand. Senator Hand moves the 811 amendment, and this is probably closer to our current practice also. Senator Hand moves to 11. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. 11 is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, when are we planning on, will they still have to go to rules? And I don't know when we meet again.
Well, we probably could do this before the Easter break if we knew we weren't going to have a huge discussion on the floor. But, I mean, there's not any urgency to it. We're operating under the temporary rules, so I thought, unless somebody, I hate to get into, during the committee deadlines, spending a couple hours on the floor on rules if other members decide they want their bite at the apple. But so I kind of thought we would do it after the Easter break, just to get beyond the committee deadlines.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious.
Credentials for news coverage.
I want a committee over there to have get a bill up to.
Oh.
Council, what are we proposing to do here? And I know the previous set of rules are different than this. So what are we proposing to change?
Mr. Chairman and members, the Sergeant-at-Arms had requested some changes to this rule, given his experience with the new rule that was adopted in the 2011 session, which was attempted to, or I think it was an attempt to take into account the changes in the media and accommodate members, perhaps, of what I might call the non-traditional media outlets. The old rule was certainly outdated in its particular references, so it needed updating 2 years ago. What this draft attempts to do is remove some of what might be considered overly prescriptive language and allow the sergeant the flexibility that he needs and eliminate language that has proven unnecessary. As you can see, and it's also, I think, rearranged in an order that makes it a little easier to understand what's being accomplished within the rule. I will draw your attention to several items that are substantive changes. Beginning on line 1.12, there's a second definition provided for a political organization. This definition, as it's worded right now, is so sweeping that it would incorporate a number of the media outlets that already have credentials. For example, I think the Star Tribune might be covered by these references. There is a primary definition of political organization that remains within the rule, you see on 1.11, and that would mean an organization controlled by a registered lobbyist, a political party, or a party organization. They would not be eligible for credentials for news coverage. Another item that I'll point out is on line 1.18, and I think it's a distinction with some significance, frequent is stricken and regular is inserted. And I think that's to get at the idea that these credentials be issued to applicants who, in fact, are in the business of providing news or do so regularly, frequent is perhaps a little more, maybe a less definite term in some respects. The same process is preserved here for receiving session credentials. The new language you see on 1.19 through 1.23 is simply being placed in a different spot within the rule. The existing rule provides an allowance for the sergeant at arms to request evidence of regular news coverage. This does the same. Then the other major change occurs on page 2, lines 2.8 through 2.31. I think it's safe to say, well, the language you see on 2.8 to 2.11 has simply been moved to the top of that page, but beginning on 2.12, the prescription on the number of spaces provided in the on the floor and in the gallery, the process for posting basically a sign-up sheet specifying that a gallery access is provided on first-come, first-served basis. These items, I think, have not necessarily proven to have been necessary for the sergeant. And if you look on the first page, the Secretary of the Senate on lines 1.7 through 1.9 will have the authority to provide a reasonable number of spaces on the floor and in the gallery. For those with credentials. That's what I have to tell you about this. The sergeant might be able to contribute more. I see that he's here if you have other questions.
Members have any questions of the Senate sergeant?
Mr. Lindquist, Chairman, members of the committee, Sven Lindquist, Sergeant at Arms. Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I almost feel guilty not having a question for him. He looks so excited to answer a question.
He doesn't get that many opportunities to appear in front of the Rules Committee.
But, Mr. Chair, I'll just say, you know, we were looking at, obviously, 2 years ago, there was a lot of changes made, and there was a lot of effort to make it, you know, standardize it, and so and obviously got too prescriptive. And I think that this, you know, there was some discussion of potentially having a rules committee do something, but I think this makes a lot more sense. And I will just ask Mr. Chair, Mr. Lindquist, this new amendment that we're looking at seems to be something that's workable that you can.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I believe that 2 years ago the effort was. All well intended. We kind of overshot the runway a little bit based on the prescriptive nature. I think that this is a journey. We learn all the time about the different needs, and certainly this is something that at this point we can work with, but I would expect that down the road we'll probably be back with other suggestions to kind of fine-tune and or broaden this as we find a need in dealing with an ever-growing press presence.
And Mr. Chair, I don't see this as a significant change, except in the sense we have loosened it up a little bit with the real change seems to be in the space issues, and then there's some other things that have moved around a little bit, but not changed the substance of credentialing the press for access.
That's my understanding of it.
For the knowledge of the Rules Committee, we are credentialing this year twice as many people as we did 2 years ago. There's a definite growing interest in broader body of people following legislative issues. So look forward to working with these new rules if you so choose to pass them.
Mr. Chair, I'll make the motion if you.
Senator Fischbach moves the A-15 amendment. Any other discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails.
That's all I have for status.
Senator Hamm, let's go back to the A-14.
And as Senator Hall makes his way forward, I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, is there a provision in the rules that would allow us to, say, not ever have a bill numbered 666 in the future? Is that something we could put in the rules somewhere?
Senator Hamm, that's the prefix of the little town of Cook that I live in. That's the point.
I just know that there are certain bills with that number that have been cause of consternation to certain members of the Senate, and I just wondered if that was, you know, kind of like floor 13 in a high-rise building.
Or 9/11.
Yeah. I see Senator Hall is here, and let's.
Senator Hand moves the A-14. Senator Hall, some discussion about why you think we need to make a change here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-14 amendment, just so you understand it, is a person providing the prayer may provide the prayer of this person's own manner, in their own manner, and may provide a prayer that is in accordance with the person's conscience and religious tradition. Simply stated, we all have different faith traditions, and as was put up today, the gal, I think it was today, the minister read a poem for a prayer. Although that is not my tradition to do, I would hope that we would respect that tradition and allow her to do that, as we did. No matter what the content is, no matter what deity they pray to, or they don't pray to a deity, I think the Senate would want to look at it, and our position would be that fairness and religious liberty is important to us, and I think it would be in a good manner that we would put it in by providing this content to our rules.
Senator Hall, I'm looking at the actual handout that's given to clergy that are going to give the prayer in the Senate, and that what they're given by the Secretary's office says, in preparing for your prayer, keep in mind that there are men and women in the Senate. Also be respectful of the religious diversity of our membership, Christian, Jewish, possibly others. We request that your prayer be interfaith and non-sectarian so that it is inclusive of all senators. Please be brief, a minute or so. Refrain from addressing political issues before the legislature.
Mr. Chair, I think, first off, it's really hard to be inclusive to all. I think that's why some senators, or in this case, go into the retiring room, because they'd rather not have a prayer at all. I think that's hard to do, and I think that the important thing would be that we allow any minister, rabbi, priest, imam, or whatever, to come up and do it in their tradition. I know in the past, for instance, I gave up about a year ago. I got up and gave a prayer, but I read the first prayer of Congress, and I read the whole thing. The last line was, in the name of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. This was a historical piece. I got rebuked from the floor. I can't imagine that the Senate would want to censor a historical document, first off. I do not mind, and I don't think anybody should mind, someone else having the freedom to pray in their tradition, no matter what deity they use, whatever name. I certainly don't. I certainly am not necessarily praying to that deity, but I give them the freedom and the right to be who they are as an American citizen and in their religious faith.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Do you have, I just checked our packets. I don't think we have copies of that. This are there additional copies available?
Yeah, we can get some. Sure.
So that we've got them, I mean, if we're going to have, since you mentioned I'd like to look at it.
I do think that when somebody's going to offer a prayer to the body of the Senate, that to the extent it could be inclusive of everybody and nobody finds it offensive, I think it's got some importance to me, at least.
The Chair?
I mean, I wouldn't want people to feel, members of the Senate, to feel offended by something someone said. To the extent we can minimize that, I think it's good for the institution. But, Senator Hall?
Well, I understand that, but from my point of view, my religious liberty is being held back because I can't use the name of Jesus in it. And yet other people, I've never seen anybody else, you know, not use the God that they have. And I, this is not for me. This is for any group. And being offended, you know, one of the staff members said to me, don't you realize you're offending people? And I said, you know, I sit in that chair back there. By sitting in that chair, I offend people. I don't think offense should be part of this. I think we should be a state of liberty. Religious liberty, certainly constitutionally, should be part of who we are. We should get offended by somebody else's faith. And I think it would be good precedence for the Senate to do something like this.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hall, I think that one thing you have to be careful about with your amendment, too, is you notice that the president can designate and personally admit the person who will provide the prayer. And so we wouldn't want to get into a situation if we didn't have any sort of understanding of what the underlying assumptions are for the person giving the prayer, that then we're putting our president in the position of deciding who that person would be based on what prayer they're going to give or not give. And so I agree with Senator Bach that this is something we need to be relatively careful about, where we want to have people who are providing prayers that don't not only offend members but offend the public, because they're addressing not just the Senate chamber but all of Minnesota in some regards. And so if we would adopt your amendment, I would think that the unintended effect would be the president would then have to screen who was giving the prayer, and I don't know if we'd want to go down that anyway. I think it's better to provide guidance where we're all comfortable with the guidance they're given, and then act accordingly.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, in the past, my understanding is the ministers or priests, rabbis, the chaplain for the day was decided by a member. A member invites. Now, I don't know if we've gotten outside of that or not, but if a member invites somebody from their community, to me that member is responsible for the content, in a sense. If somebody doesn't like the content or the person for some reason, you'd like to go talk to the member, I have no problem with that. If in this we could add on line 1.4, after the prayer, invited by a member, because I assume that's what it is, the idea would be, again, that I think what is being offended? If somebody is not praying the way I like them to pray, can I say I'm offended? I think in that case, most of the time we wouldn't have any prayer. Somebody would probably be offended. You know, I don't personally understand that. So I have a hard time with the word offended. But I'm trying to work with this. I do appreciate that we have prayer. That's an honoring that we all have, because I think all or most of us have gods that we believe in. We have faith there. So I think it's great that we do this. I think there's lots of precedents around the country that we do this. And I would like to keep it.
Any other discussion? Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chairman, I just would say I do support this addition to the rules. I think there is a religious liberty component to what we believe as American citizens. I know that I've been in the Senate chamber when we've had people offer a prayer in languages that I don't think anybody in the room has understood. We have no idea what that person is saying or to whom or what that person is praying to. And I think that in some sense to say that a person is a legitimate chaplain based on the content of their prayer, I'm not sure we should do that. If we say we're going to allow people to pray and say, you can pray, then you pray, and you do what you do. And I may not like it, or I may disagree, but that's what we should do. Or we should say no prayer at all. Now, I wouldn't agree with that. I think we should allow prayer. But because prayer is personal and religions are personal, it's very hard to guarantee that you will never offend anybody by a prayer. And if we say we're going to do that, I think that's an impossible threshold to meet. And because of that, I think the correct position would be to say, let's allow people the liberty, if they're invited to pray, to do so in their own terms. I certainly appreciate the sense that we want to have a decorum, I think we ought to have expectations that people be brief, that they be instructed to not be provocative, if that's the right word, but intentionally. But to say that you can't say anything that might offend, I think if I want to be offended by a non-sectarian prayer because it's non-sectarian, I could come and say, well, that offends me, because I'm a person that only thinks prayer should be one way, and if it's not that way, then I'm going to be offended. Well, if that's the standard, then no prayer should be permitted at all. So I support what Senator Hall is saying. I think there is a religious liberty component of this, that if we're going to allow prayer, we should allow people to pray in a respectful way in the manner of their choosing, and try to be tolerant of that, as long as we do it some constraint on the time and so forth. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I think this language actually makes it more inclusive, because it does respect the traditions of all, and will prevent some of the concern that has happened in the past. And if there is, on Senator Stevens' part, a concern about the president taking personal responsibility for it, I mean, maybe the suggestion of Senator Hall about has been invited, we can remove the word personally, so the president may designate and admit the person who has been invited by a member and will provide. But I think that this makes it more inclusive, because it does recognize the fact that there are numerous, limitless traditions about how a prayer will be offered, and this will make it clear that we respect each and every one of those.
Any other discussion? Senator Hanrahan renews his motion to adopt A14. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Country, no?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Any other amendments? Senator Hall, thank you for coming down. Senator Sieben moves that council adopt or construct, I guess, a document that is consistent with the SR0019 as amended, and that be referred to the Rules Committee for their consideration. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. No. Motion prevails. Thank you, everybody. Committee's adjourned.